that drive and new. Freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing, I mean nothing, honey, if it ain't free. Yeah, feeling good was easy love when he sang the blues. You know, feeling good was good enough for me. Good enough for me and my Bobby.
The Problem I Want to Have by Melusina, read by Patica. Summary. Trish has heard the jokes all the guys make, and she's worked hard to never be that girl. She's not going to do anything that could screw up the band, and she's not going to be Pete Wentz's fucking girlfriend. Trisha has fucking earned this hotel night. She drove all day because Pete was fighting with Janae, and Joe had a massive hangover. And Andy's a shitty driver under the best of conditions, so they've all agreed he's not allowed to drive in bad weather. Trisha's shoulders ache from steering the van on the slippery highway, and she has a crick in her neck from sleeping wedged between Pete and a box of merch for weeks. And her foot hurts where Joe dropped an amp on it when they were unloading their gear. It was a great show, and the crowd was amazing. It's still weird when people actually know the words and sing along. And usually she'd be buzzing from the post-show high. But tonight, a real bed sounded like heaven. All she wants to do is sleep. Unfortunately, there's no sleep to be had. Pete and Janae's fight has escalated into one of their periodic breakups, and Pete's rage has expanded to fill the space available. Joe and Andy have had enough of Pete's tantrum and have ducked out for a late dinner. Trisha should have gone with them. Instead, she's wearing her headphones and fucking around in GarageBand, trying her best to ignore Pete throwing shit around the room and repeatedly calling Janae and hanging up before she answers. In a totally expected development, he eventually throws his phone across the room, shattering it on the bathroom tile. He punches the wall, yelling, "Fuck her anyway!" Trisha pulls her headphones off and says, "Knock it off, asshole! You're going to get us kicked out of here." "Might as well," Pete sulks. "It's not like the night could get any worse." "Are you attached to your balls? Because if you fuck this up and I have to sleep in the goddamn van again, I'll show you exactly how much worse this night can get." Pete throws himself across the foot of the bed dramatically and yanks on his hair. "What kind of friend are you, Stump? I thought girls were supposed to be like sympathetic and caring and shit." Trisha just barely prevents herself from saying, "You mean like Janae?" Instead, she shuts down her computer and puts it on the floor. Recognizing the invitation, Pete crawls up the bed and under the hideous floral bedspread, snuggling in close to Trisha and resting his head on her shoulder. For a long while, neither of them speaks. Finally, he says, "This really sucks." "Yeah," Trisha says, "I know." Pete shifts around and props his head on his hand, just looking at Trisha. His eyes are sunken and bloodshot, still slightly rimmed with eyeliner. Trisha runs her fingers over the dark circles under his eyes, like she could wipe them away. "You should get some sleep." "Sing to me?" Trisha sings softly. "Busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train." And Pete curls up next to her, his face buried in the pillow. By the time she sung the last, "Hey, hey, Bobby McGee," his breathing is deep and even, and the tension in his shoulders has started to relax. Trisha rolls over and debates taking her bra off, before deciding that she doesn't want to risk waking Pete up again. She turns off the bedside lamp and wills herself to sleep. When she wakes, the room is still dark and the other bed is still empty. Pete's pressed up against her back, warm in the over-air-conditioned room. He's got an arm draped over her hip, his fingers are laced with hers, and he's humming "Me and Bobby McGee" into the nape of her neck. Somehow he knows she's awake, because he says, "We should do some Janis. Work it into our set." "Not really our sound," Trisha replies, still turned away. "Fuck that noise. Fall Out Boy music is whatever music we want to make," Just go to sleep, Pete, Trisha says wearily. He's quiet for a while, although she can feel his breath puffing across her skin. Then he whispers, Hey, Trixie Trickster. Go to sleep. Trish, he insists, why don't you ever kiss me back? This conversation would be a bad idea at any time. At O Dark 30, it's a disaster waiting to happen. I do, Trisha says, vainly hoping that we'll shut it down. She should have known better than to engage, because now that Pete's gotten a response, he gets even more insistent, propping up his elbows and poking her shoulder. You do not! You have a girlfriend, Trisha says. She winces when Pete retorts, Not anymore. Even though she knows this breakup is probably just as temporary as the previous ones. Anyway, he says, that's not... He trails off, uncertainly, and now she really wants to know how he was going to finish that sentence. She rolls over to face him and prompts, What? Just... He flails his hand. It's you! It's not the same. I mean... Of course not. It's just Trisha. So it's not like cheating. Not like kissing a real girl. Pete likes tiny, dark girls with sharp features and sharp edges, whose whole lives revolve around boyfriend drama, and what shade of eyeliner will perfectly convey how quirky and unpredictable they are. Trisha's never going to be like that. Never going to be what Pete wants. All his teasing is just some part of fucked up game Pete's playing. A car turns into the parking lot, the headlight sweeping a beam of light across the room, and giving Trisha a momentary glimpse of Pete's furrowed brow. He says, Hey, no, don't. And then he kisses her. It's fumbling and awkward, and his mouth tastes a little sour, but she kisses back, because she can't not, because they're alone in the dark, and he sounds so sincere, and she wants to believe him. It's sloppy, too wet, too intense. And she can feel his stubble scratching her face. It's perfect. Then she comes to her senses and pushes him away, because they need to stop before this goes any further, before they do something they can't undo. Pete makes a choked-off noise, and the hand he's twisting in her hair stills. What? We shouldn't do this? Trisha's trying for firm, but it ends with a rising inflection that makes it a question. Pete pulls back all the way then, putting space between them and pulling his hands into the sleeves of his hoodie. Do you want to? His voice is flat, measured. Do you? The only sound in the room is the drone of the air conditioner. This is where Andy and Joe come back, and it turns into one of those running gags that none of them can ever let go. But the parking lot is quiet, and the door doesn't open. Finally, Pete says, Do you? Because I want... He exhales noisily. Fuck, Trisha. How can you not know that? He sounds indignant, almost hurt, like somehow she's let him down. She can't make sense of this. Of course Pete says he wants her. He says all kinds of crazy shit about Trisha. Maybe he even means it in his own way. But as much as she'd like to believe him, he doesn't want Trisha the way he wants Janae, not the way Trisha wants Pete. The disappointment in his voice makes her feel guilty anyway. Whatever. Logic is optional when you're dealing with Pete Wentz. The band. It's a bad idea, she says weakly. Bad ideas are what we're made of, Pete says, like it's a dare. Trisha wants to object, to say, No, that's you, not me. But she can't kick him when he's down again. It seems important to put herself on his side, like it would be a betrayal to draw that distinction between them. Trisha still can't figure out what's going on here. Whatever it is, they're in it together, just like always. She's not sure what would happen if she ever rejected that, and she's not sure she wants to find out. Bad ideas and heartbreak, she thinks, but she can't let him see what this is going to cost her. So she smiles bravely, ignoring the fact that he probably can't see her face in the dark room. Okay, Then let's do this thing. When Trisha wakes up the next morning, Pete's wrapped around her, snoring slightly, still dead to the world. The only thing unusual about it is that they're both naked. Well, and how deeply Pete is sleeping. Otherwise, it's almost exactly like any other morning. And something about that, something about the familiarity and mundaneness of it, makes everything fall into place. Suddenly, she sees it clearly, maybe for the first time. Pete says that he and Trisha are soulmates. She rolls her eyes, but she knows exactly what he means. He understands her better than anyone ever has, gets the way her brain works, catches her ideas and runs with them, and she'll take that over sex any day of the week. He doesn't have that with Janae, or any of the other girls he picks up after shows, and it had never really occurred to Trisha that he might want to have that and sex with her. It's like the best of all possible worlds, and Trisha wants it so badly it makes her chest hurt. But nothing else has changed. There's still the band to think about, and how it might fuck things up if she and Pete got together. If they tried, and it didn't work out. Not to mention, how it would change the way people think about Trisha if they knew she was fucking Pete. Trisha's heard the jokes all the guys make, and she's worked hard to never be that girl. It's not something you can recover from once it happens. Joe and Andy are still gone. But it's going to be really awkward if they walk in on her and Pete naked in bed together. She pries herself out of Pete's arms and takes a long, hot shower to give herself time to think. By the time Andy's pounding on the door, demanding that she wrap it up and give someone else a turn, she's made a decision. She's not going to do anything that could screw up the band, and she's not going to be Pete Wentz's fucking girlfriend. They all have breakfast at the Kettle. And when Trisha sits by Joe in the booth, Pete looks a little surprised. But even Pete's not going to call her on it in front of Joe and Andy. So he settles for giving her these little sidelong looks, like he can't quite figure out what's going on. Trisha puts on a fake smile and pretends like everything's fine. She makes sure not to be alone with Pete for a few days, and keeps telling herself that it doesn't matter. It's just a thing that happened. Just one of a thousand weird things that happen every day when they're on the road. All the stupid shit that makes up their lives. And in the grand scheme of things, it's not a big deal. After a week of this, Pete buys a new phone. The day after that, he and Janae get back together. Trisha tries the song again, with a faster, more syncopated tune on the guitar. But Pete just shakes his head and tears the page out of his notebook. He crumples it up and throws it at the trash can. And, as usual, misses. It lands on the growing pile of wadded-up notebook paper. "These all suck," he announces. "Fuck you too," Trisha says, and she doesn't bother to keep the frustration out of her voice. Because it's been a long damn day. No, a long damn month. And she's sick and tired of Pete's histrionics. "It's not you, it's me, babe," Pete says, sketching a bat in the margin of his notebook. "We need a break," Trisha says. "We should get tattoos." "I was thinking more like a Futurama marathon or an ice cream run, something with a little less commitment." "You need a tattoo, Trishalicious," Pete wheedles, giving her a look that's exactly like someone eyeballing the placement of a painting on a wall. He swirls his pointer finger in the air and says, "Like right there," landing his finger on the patch of collarbone exposed by the cutout neck of her t-shirt. "Well, you're the expert," Trisha says, laughing it off. But instead of pulling away, Pete rests his hand there and sucks his bottom lip into his mouth thoughtfully. A year ago, Trisha would have pushed him off. But right now, she'll do anything to keep him grounded, keep him here. Everything else is petty and small compared to that. Pete's fingers are warm against her skin, and there's something mesmerizing about the intense look of concentration on his face. After a minute, he uses the pen in his other hand to draw a shape, a few quick lines, and then, just to the right of it, a few more. There, Pete says in a satisfied tone. He gives her a little push, and Trisha stands and makes her way to the mirror over the dresser. Pete's drawn two stylized stars on her collarbone, the one on the right slightly higher and larger than the other. At her questioning glance, he says, "Second star to the right, and straight on till morning." Irrationally irritated, Trisha snaps, "I'm not Wendy to your Peter Pan, or Tinkerbell either." Pete's brow furrows. "Yeah, no, of course not. You're not my sidekick. We're more like partners in crime." His face lights up the way it always does when he knows he's on the right track with an idea. Butch and Sundance? Bonnie and Clyde? Thelma and Louise! Trish can't not smile when he grins at her like that. Her anger dissipates as quickly as it flared. "I am not getting a wanted dead or alive tattoo." Bill takes a long pull of his beer and says, "So what's the deal with Pete and Mikey Way? Did Pete break up with his jailbait girlfriend?" "For now," Trisha says, shrugging. "They'll get back together next week." She's been telling herself this since Pete developed his crazy crush on Mikey. Travi nods and says, "That's some Days of Our Lives shit right there." He's sprawled out, limp and boneless, one arm draped over Trisha and his long legs tangled with Bill's. "None of my business, but dude could do better than that chick, that's all I'm saying." "Yeah, well, have you seen the girls he hooks up with? He could do a lot worse, too." "Team Mikey all the way," Bill says, leaning forward to clink his beer bottle with Trisha's, apparently missing the part where she's not even a little bit convinced this thing with Mikey is a good idea. Travi rests his chin on the top of Trisha's head and asks, "What about you, baby girl? You got a girlfriend with amnesia? A secret husband nobody knows about? What's your big drama?" "Not Trisha," Bill says tipsily. "She's 100% drama-free. She's like the yin to Pete's yang." Travi snorts, and Trisha puts her head in her hands. The worst part is that Bill's genuinely trying to be nice. Bill asks, "Where is Pete, anyway?" Travi arches an eyebrow and says, "Rubbing his yang on Mikey Way, the last time I saw him." Bill collapses on Travi, giggling, and Trisha stands, abruptly done with the whole conversation. "I'm wiped out, guys, and no way I'm getting any sleep with Tickle Me Elmo over there laughing it up in the corner. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here." Pete and Janae don't get back together, and the thing with Mikey just gets more and more creepily codependent. No matter how intense things got with Janae, Pete always made time for Trisha. But this summer, he's so wrapped up in Mikey, she can hardly get him to sit down and write with her, even though they'd agreed they needed to get another album out as quickly as possible. And even when she can get him to work, he spends the whole time fucking around with his sidekick and texting Mikey. Mikey's a great guy and all, but Trisha really kind of wishes he'd break a leg or get some non-lethal disease that would get him sent home for the rest of the tour. Trisha needs a distraction, something to keep her from wondering exactly what's going on with Pete and Mikey, and worrying about how Pete will take it if, when, the whole thing blows up in his face. Maybe what she needs is to get laid. That shouldn't be a problem. She's surrounded by guys. But it's a small scene, and it's pretty easy to imagine how it would play out if it were her and Mikey everyone were gossiping about. Trisha's always had a strict policy of keeping her love life safely removed from her work. She's in the band, not with it, and she's made damn sure to never fuck that up. Sure, it means that she doesn't date as much as she'd like, but her work is her life, and that doesn't leave much room for love anyway. Or sex, even. Mostly, she just pretends that she's one of the guys. Except that the guys hang all over each other, and kiss, and make what might or might not be jokes about sucking each other's dicks. So that doesn't always help. Take Travi, for example. He has no concept of personal space. He likes to touch everyone. He's always got an arm slung over someone's shoulder, or a hand resting on someone's thigh while he makes a point. He doesn't touch Trisha any more than he touches Pete or Bill, but that's not saying much. Trisha can't help but find it distracting. It would help if he wasn't stupidly, ridiculously gorgeous, or if he wasn't one of the nicest, most talented people Trisha's ever met. But yeah, it's nothing he doesn't do with everyone. So Trisha's taken by surprise when Travi plops down beside her and says, "So, subtle doesn't work with you, huh?" Everyone else is on an emergency Walmart run because Joe and Andy decided they needed a slip and slide, and Hemingway's almost out of dog food, and Mikey knows a local who's willing to chauffeur them around for the day. Trisha's taking advantage of the quiet and doing some writing. She's so focused on deciphering some lyrics that Pete scribbled on the back of a boarding pass that she hadn't even heard Travi come out of the bus. When she looks up at Travi, he's wearing an adorable little cap and a sleeveless t-shirt that does amazing things for his arms. And maybe she stares for a minute before realizing she has no idea what he just said. Finally, Trisha says, "Huh?" Because she's the most articulate. "I've been trying to get your attention for months. I even asked Pete if..." That catches Trisha's attention, and it makes the hairs on the back of her neck stand up. "You what?" Travi's eyes go wide. "Whoa, I just..." Trisha's too mad to let him continue. "I don't know what you think is going on with me and Pete, but he doesn't own me, okay? I don't need his fucking..." "Hey, no, Trish, just give me a second." Travi caught hold of her wildly gesturing hands and laces his fingers through hers and says, "Okay?" He doesn't say anything else until she nods sharply, her heart still racing, but she's prepared to hear him out. "I didn't mean... I just asked Pete, you know, if you were letting me down easy, if I should take the hint, or if maybe you weren't getting it." "Oh," she says grudgingly, "that seems fair." But knowing that and getting her body to stand down are two different things. She can't help but ask, "What did he say?" Travi gives her a lazy half smile. "He recommended the direct approach." His thumb brushes over her wrist and she shivers. "He said I should text you and ask, 'Do you like me? Yes, no, maybe?' But I figured I could man up and just come over here." Travi's leaning in close, and he smells so good. Trisha doesn't really think about it, just lifts her head and lets him kiss her softly. She makes a little sound when he pulls away, an involuntary protest, and he quirks an eyebrow and says, "Yeah?" "Yeah," Trisha says. Then she remembers that this is that thing she doesn't do, and she puts some distance between them. "I mean, that's, He's just moving his thumb back and forth across her wrist. It shouldn't be so disconcerting. "But you got somebody special waiting for you?" Trisha shakes her head. She tries to remind herself that this is a bad idea. But she's so damn tired of being careful, of holding herself back, while everybody else gets to do what they want. While Pete... Travi says, "Does that mean you're good with me doing this?" And cups her chin, long fingers splaying over her neck. It's a welcome diversion from thoughts of Pete, and when he kisses her, she kisses back eagerly. This time, his mouth lingers over hers, and when her lips part, he slides his tongue into her mouth and presses his fingers against the nape of her neck, pulling her in closer. It's been way too long since somebody's touched Trisha like that, and when he pulls back, she says, "God, yes," and pulls him back in for another kiss. Travi lets his hands wander, grazing the side of her breast, dipping down the back of her jeans, until Trisha groans into his mouth, and he wraps an arm around her and pulls her in closer, lifting her up and over, so she's straddling his lap. He murmurs, "It's okay," in between kisses. And it's so much better than okay. Trisha can't even figure out how to respond. Her knees are sinking into the sofa cushions, and he's hard between her legs, a delicious pressure that makes her wish they were both wearing a lot less clothes. When she doesn't answer, he pulls back, straightening up, and shifts his weight so that she's sitting on his thighs. Hey, you good with this baby? Yeah, yes, Trisha says, forcing her mouth to make the words. Her hands are still twisted in his shirt, and her lips are tingly from so much kissing. Just checking. Wouldn't want you to do anything you didn't want to do. He rubs his thumb over her cheekbone, and she leans her face into his hand. Trisha darts her tongue out to lick the tattoo on his wrist and flashes her teeth at him. I'm good. He laughs low and throaty and makes Trisha squirm in his lap. Got it. In that case... He drops his hand to her ass and urges her forward until their bodies are pressed together again, their mouths almost, but not quite, touching. Fuck it. Sometimes you have to do things you might regret later. Trisha's still asleep, enjoying the luxury of a day off, when her phone buzzes with a text from Victoria. Still up for laundry? Trisha replies, "Be right there," and rolls out of her bunk. 15 minutes later, she's sitting in the Cobra's lounge, wearing her least filthy pair of jeans and one of Joe's Star Wars t-shirts, with a trucker cap over her unwashed hair. Victoria's still in the boxer shorts and tank top she slept in, drinking coffee and idly running her fingers through her disheveled hair. Trisha's still trying to figure Victoria out. They'd barely met before the tour, and it's early days yet. Trisha had been inclined to write Victoria off, but Bill and Travie both said she was great, so Trisha was willing to give her a chance. Now that she's faced with the prospect of several hours of girl talk, Trisha's beginning to wonder if she's made the wrong decision. Oh God, what if Victoria wants to give Trisha a makeover? On the other hand, there's not much talk, girl or otherwise, happening yet. Victoria's quiet and subdued, clearly still waking up, and her face is pale and vulnerable, much younger looking without her usual makeup. She finishes her coffee and pulls out a giant tackle box of makeup. Trisha sips her coffee and makes awkward conversation about the previous day's show, while Victoria brushes her hair and puts it up on foam rollers, then applies foundation, eyeshadow, and blush with an expert hand. The more makeup she puts on, the more verbal she becomes. It's a little unsettling to see Victoria gradually slip into the chatty, flirty persona that Trisha's seen previously. Almost ready, I swear, Victoria assures Trisha, which makes Trisha feel vaguely guilty for how twitchy she's getting. Victoria's deliberating between two virtually identical tubes of lip gloss when Gabe wanders into the lounge from the bunks, wearing nothing but his boxer briefs and a very satisfied smile. Victoria, love of my life, tell me there's coffee. Victoria discards both lip glosses and chooses a little pot of gloss that's maybe a shade redder than either of them. No such luck, Romeo. She uses a little brush to outline the bow of her mouth. Gabe collapses morosely at the table. Vicky, he wheedles. She stops and points the tiny brush at him. Don't call me that. Vicky T, he corrects. Best girl. When that gets no response, Gabe says, "The thing is," with the air of someone who's found an irrefutable argument, "you can't make coffee right until you've got some caffeine in your system. It's just not fair to ask someone who hasn't had any coffee yet to make the coffee." "No can do," Victoria says, taking the foam rollers out of her hair. "Trisha and I are going to do laundry. Make Bill do it." "But he hasn't had any coffee yet either," Gabe retorts. Then he realizes what she just said, and his eyes light up. "Laundry? Could you just..." "Nope. Do you want me to send you the address for the laundromat?" They continue in this vein until Trisha and Victoria leave for the laundromat. Trish is amazed. There aren't many people who can hold their own against Gabe. She's not proud of the fact that it never occurred to her that Victoria could be one of them.
Oh my God, Pete says, looking stunned. Trisha has legs! Do you think America can handle it?
Trisha resists the urge to tuck her bathing suit bottoms down and instead flicks his ears. Beach blanket bingo for the summer festival season, asshole. You guys are all wearing swim trunks. What did you think I was going to wear? Anyway, now that the whole world has seen your dick, they can probably deal with my legs.
Pete says, give it a rest, but it lacks any heat.
Could have been worse. At least it wasn't a sex tape.
Pete grins. Nice, Stump. If this band thing doesn't work out, you should consider a career in grief counseling. Sorry your husband died, but at least he had life insurance.
If the band doesn't work out, I'm going to be an accountant, she replies, sitting beside him on the boardwalk.
Yeah, huh, Pete replies dubiously. And I'm going to be an insurance agent. Joe can be a doctor, and Andy can be a...
priest?
Pete snorts at the thought. I think we'd better stick with the band.
He pauses and says, listen, are you really okay with this? It's not like we discussed at all. I can call Liz right now. Joe and Andy will back us up. They can't do the shoot if we all refuse to participate.
Trisha shakes her head, making her pigtail swing.
They gave me a bunch of choices. I picked this one. I wanted to try something new. The retro two-piece isn't even that revealing, but suddenly Trisha's very conscious of the way the top accentuates her cleavage and how pale her legs look stretched out next to Pete's. She bites her lip and finally blurts out, tell me the truth. Do I look ridiculous?
Pete looks shocked.
Ridiculous?
No. Adorable? Hot? Yes.
Sweet talker, Trisha says, and kicks sand at his foot, more pleased than she'd like to admit.
You look great, Trish, honest. And it's not like gratuitous or whatever. It's part of the whole theme. And anyway, I'll probably show more skin than you do by the end of the day.
You always look great, but that's not what this is about, you know? You're not in the band because of how you look, so you should only do this if you want to.
Sometimes Pete gets it exactly right.
I'm good, she says, wrapping an arm around his shoulder and squeezing. But thanks for looking out for me.
I've never fucked Travi.
Trisha shoots Pete a dirty look and takes a sip of lukewarm beer.
I knew it, he crows.
Andy rolls his eyes. We all knew. That is not what teaching someone to use GarageBand sounds like. Joe says, any chance of you guys getting back together? Because Travi had...
Trisha shakes her head. Sucks to be you, bro. You're gonna have to find another connection. Summer fling.
Pete hums a few bars of Summer Nights, and Andy taps out the drum line on the arm of the sofa.
Trisha retorts, I've never fucked a member of My Chemical Romance.
Pete lifts his chin and pointedly doesn't drink, which is absolute and total bullshit.
Oh, come on!
Above the waist, he says.
Your dick is below your waist, jackass, Trisha insists.
Yeah, but his mouth's not, says Joe. Pete starts to protest, then gets distracted when Andy takes a sip of his water.
You totally just drank! Was it Frank? Gerard?
Trisha interjects, oh my God, you fucked Bob, didn't you? And then remembers, oh right, she slept with Bob too, and drinks herself. It's not that she forgot Bob exactly. It's just that the whole thing ended badly, and she tries not to think about it.
Andy smirks and adamantly refuses to give Pete any details, no matter how much Pete badgers him. Finally, Joe says, "Geez, give it a rest. It's Andy's turn." Andy says, I've never had sex on a roller coaster." Joe drains his glass. "Damn straight. You guys wish you were as awesome as I am." Then, because he's a total asshole, he says, "I've never fucked Vicky T." And laughs his ass off when Pete and Trisha both drink. "Should have gone for the threesome, Pete." A series of increasingly pornographic images flashes through Trisha's mind, and she maybe zones out for a minute or two. She's startled back to awareness by Andy saying, "Pete, dude, it's your turn," in the tone of someone who's already had to repeat himself a time or two. Belatedly, Trisha adds, "Yeah, Pete, get with the program." Joe snorts and gives her a knowing glance, which makes Trisha flush and knock over her beer. She kind of hates this game. They run out of beer and call it a night, but Trisha's way too drunk to sleep. The bed keeps spinning, despite the steadying foot she puts on the floor by the bunk, and after the third time she has to get up to pee, she gives up and goes into the lounge to sober up while she watches TV. She'd completely forgotten that Pete had crashed in there. He's stretched out on the couch with the Afghan Joe's bubby crocheted pulled over him, and she doesn't realize that he's awake until he whispers, "Can't sleep?" "Yeah," she says, already curling up on the couch with him and fitting her body around his. He shifts around to accommodate her, and she tucks her cold hands into the sleeves of his hoodie. They breathe together for a while, chest rising and falling in rhythm with the engine rumbling beneath them. It takes the edge off her buzz, quiets the noise in her head, and shifts her focus to a kind of animal awareness of her body and of all the places where she's touching Pete. It's soothing, centering, maybe better than sleep, and she closes her eyes, letting herself be subsumed by it. It's startling when Pete speaks, breathing warm air over her ear. "So, you and Victoria, huh? What was that like?" Trish is too comfortable to get offended. Instead, she just pokes his calf with her toe and asks, "What was it like for you?" "Giggly," Pete responds, burying his nose in Trisha's hair. "We were pretty stoned." Trisha has a vivid image of Victoria's face, flushed and laughing, as she pinned Trisha down and sank her sharp teeth into Trisha's shoulder. I think she's just like that. "Well, yeah, she was giggly too." With the exaggerated sobriety of the very drunk, Pete continues, "She really likes to fuck." "It's awesome," Trisha agrees, partially because she's still pretty drunk herself, and partially because it's true, and it seems unfair not to acknowledge it. Victoria's enthusiasm had definitely been inspiring, and fuck if Trisha's going to pretend otherwise. "She has pretty hair, and her tits are amazing." "Don't objectify her, Stump," Pete says in a spot-on imitation of Gerard Way. Trisha laughs so hard she falls off the couch. Pete catches her, wrapping his arms around her to hold her steady while they both giggle, and Trisha insists, "But it's true!" Just when she's almost caught her breath, Pete says, "You're not wrong," and they're both giggling again, so loudly that Andy yells, "Knock it the fuck off, assholes!" Trisha buries her face into Pete's arm to muffle her giggles, and she can feel Pete's body shaking with laughter, his face pressed against her shoulder. She's suddenly so glad to be here with him that she can't help but plant a smacking kiss on his mouth. Pete just grins at her and presses his forehead to hers. His breath ghosts across Trisha's mouth, and it's way too easy to think about kissing him again. Pete's grin falters, and he licks his lips. Trisha tilts her mouth forward, and just like that, they're kissing again, open-mouthed and slow. When Trisha's tongue darts into Pete's mouth, he makes a startled sound that brings her to her senses, and she pulls away. "We should get some sleep," Trisha says, determinedly pretending like nothing just happened. Early call in the morning.
Yeah, Pete says cautiously, following her lead.
Trisha exhales the brush she didn't know she was holding and arranges herself on the couch, tucking her head against his chest so she can listen to his heartbeat until she falls asleep.
You were great on Ellen, Victoria says, through a mouthful of veggie burger.
Thanks, but I really, really don't want to talk about it.
Victoria licks a streak of mustard and ketchup off her perfectly manicured hand, flashing a mouth of partially chewed food. She's seriously the grossest person Trisha knows, and that includes Dirty and John Walker.
Why not? You guys sounded awesome, and the interview was super cute.
God, you should see the comments on Pete's blog. Pete started screening them after he and Ashley got together, so at least Trisha doesn't have to see the worst of them anymore. But the stuff Pete approves is bad enough. The new songs suck. The band sold out. Pete's an asshole. He never rejects comments that are critical of him. Trisha can imagine what the fans are saying about her in the deleted comments.
Fuck 'em, Victoria says, derailing Trisha's train of thought. Nobody ever likes anything new.
It's not that simple.
Victoria looks up, sharp-eyed.
Why not?
This is... I don't think I want to do this anymore.
Victoria chokes on her milkshake.
You want to leave the band?
No, I just... Trisha takes a bite of her grilled cheese and grimaces. It's stone cold now.
Maybe Pete's driving me crazy. I'm driving him crazy. I think we're both driving Joe and Andy crazy. Maybe I just need a break from being...
Trisha trails off, uncertainly.
Pete's kind of... intense.
Trisha sighs.
You have no idea.
After a long silence, Victoria asks, Is it about the music, or is it about you and Pete?
Trisha winces. Leave it to Victoria to cut right to the chase.
I don't even know. It's all mixed up in my head. Some of the stuff I'm writing, it's not our sound, you know?
But you're right, it's not just that.
Is it Ashley?
No, she's great.
Victoria gives Trisha a skeptical look, and Trisha says, Really?
Trisha likes Ashley. She's sweet, and she loves Pete, and Bronx is adorable, and this ought to make it easy to just shut the door on the unfinished business between Trisha and Pete and focus on the band.
Victoria doesn't say anything. Finally, Trisha sighs and says,
I made a decision a long time ago that Pete and I weren't going to go there. I want him to be happy, you know? It wouldn't be fair.
Because you didn't want to fuck up the band, Victoria says. But now you're thinking about leaving the band?
It doesn't make sense, Trisha exclaims. I know. I just don't know how much longer I can keep doing this.
Prince, David Bowie, Janis Joplin?
Oh, fuck you!
Pete takes a sip of coffee and smirks. Paybacks are hell, Trish.
I don't think I like this game anymore, she grumbles, stalling for time.
I hate this game, Joe says, and you've been playing it for... He checks his watch. 2 hours, 13 minutes, and 22 seconds. So feel free to stop any time.
I still don't get why you have to kill one of them. What's that about?
Andy looks up from his book and kicks Joe hard.
Shut it. You know that whatever they find to do instead is probably going to be worse.
Their flight was supposed to depart 4 hours ago, but there's a bad storm in Chicago, and there's no word on when they'll actually be able to leave Houston. Everyone's temper is getting a little short.
We could play 20 questions, Trisha suggests.
No, Joe and Andy chorus. Andy adds, it's platypus. It's always platypus. It's always been platypus. And it will always be platypus. Forever and ever, amen. No 20 questions. Pete ignores all of this, propping his elbows on his knees, interlacing his fingers, and resting his chin on his hands expectantly. Well? I'd fuck Prince, because come on, who wouldn't hit that? And marry Janice, because she's fucking perfect. And, Cliff Bowie, because sorry dude, but somebody's gotta come in third place. Not everybody gets a ribbon, Pete agrees sadly. Before Trisha can fire off the next round to Pete, the gate agent comes on the PA and announces a gate change. By the time they gather up all their shit, trundle to another fucking terminal, stopping for coffee on the way, and get resettled at the new gate, Trisha's completely lost her train of thought. They were up so late the night before, and up early for an interview before they had to be at the airport. They're all exhausted, and for a while, they just sip their coffee and stare out the window, where no planes of any sort appear. Joe's almost asleep, his head resting on Trisha's shoulder, when Pete says, hey Trix, what's your tattoo today? It's become a frequent question, and Trisha always has a different answer. Today she's not sure. Because Janice is on her mind, she finally says, maybe the little wristlet that Janice had with the cherry blossom? Pete tilts his head, examining her arm, clearly imagining the tattoo on her wrist. He wrinkles up his nose and pulls a Sharpie out of his back pocket. He always likes to try out her ideas, see what they'd look like if she got them. A rabbit on her ankle, a leafy vine on her shoulder, a treble clef with a little hook at the nape of her neck. This time, he grasps her arm and pulls the sleeve of her hoodie up to her elbow. The tip of the pen is cool and smooth, moving quickly and confidently over her skin, a sharp contrast to the warmth of Pete's fingers. It's completely unsurprising to see the words, freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose, unfurl across her inner arm in Pete's familiar scrawl. He ends with a flourish right where her wrist meets her palm. I like it, Trisha says, and Pete nods. It suits you. Andy looks up from his book and mutters, more like Calamity's child, if you ask me. Nah, Pete says, grinning. She cliffed Bowie, remember? These are not Fallout Boy songs. Joe sounds weary. Fuck you, Pete says. Trisha wrote them, so they're Fallout Boy songs. Andy says, dude, no offense, but I could write a lot of great shit that's not right for us as a band. You're the one who's always talking about our fucking brand or whatever. He turns and gives Trisha an apologetic look. They're great, but they're not us, you know? No, I get that, she says. Trisha and Pete have already had this fight, and he'd insisted she show Andy and Joe the new stuff she was working on. Pete says, it's almost like you guys don't even want to try. We can make this work. It'll be different, but you gotta keep moving or you die, right? We can rework these. A bright hot rage comes over Trisha at the thought of changing these songs. They're hers, and she worked hard on them. And she doesn't want to try to make them fit into some kind of Fallout Boy-shaped mold. No! Joe's right. They're not Fallout Boy songs. I don't want to rework them. Pete's talking over her, gesturing a little wildly. Then don't! It wouldn't be the first time we've changed our sound. He wheels on Joe and Andy and says accusingly, these are great songs. If you guys would just give them a chance. In a conciliatory tone, Andy says, nobody's saying they're not good, Pete. Shit, man, we all know Trisha's a genius. If anything, that just makes Pete angrier. He gets right up in Andy's face and says, If you don't see what's going on here, you're a fucking idiot.
Chill out, dude, Joe says, attempting to pull Pete away from Andy. Pete shoves Joe hard, making him stumble into Andy, and nearly knocking both of them off their feet. Everything's spinning out of control, way too fast, and Trisha feels like she might be sick. Joe says,
"Fuck you. I'm out of here till you can keep your goddamn hands to yourself. Trish, can you talk some sense into him?"
And he slams the door on his way out. Andy takes a deep breath and says, "You know what? I think we all need a break before somebody does something stupid. I'll see you guys tomorrow, okay?"
Andy leaves, and Pete stares at the floor, his jaw still set and twitching.
Fuck them anyway. They don't know a good thing when they see it.
"Pete," Trisha says, "it's past time for them to talk about this, and it's only going to get worse if they keep ignoring the elephant in the room."
"Don't say it," Pete begs.
"I need to figure this out, Pete. Figure out what I can do on my own. I'm not saying the band has to break up or whatever. Just, can we take some time off while I figure this out?"
When Pete finally looks up, Trisha can see him pulling it together, putting on the mask he's never bothered to wear for her. And that's maybe the worst thing about this so far.
"Sure thing, Trish. We'll take a break. You do what you gotta do, okay?"
Trisha doesn't read about it in the tabloids, but she doesn't hear about it from Pete either. Gabe calls asking how Pete's doing, and that's how she finds out that Pete and Ashley are filing for divorce. She's kind of ashamed that her first reaction is a flash of anger that Pete didn't tell her himself. It's not about her. She gets that. But there was a time when she would have known every detail, whether she wanted to or not. And it hurts that he didn't even bother to tell her that it had gotten that bad with Ashley. Her second reaction is guilt. She should have known, even if it's been a while since they talked. She calls Pete and holds her breath until he answers.
"How are you doing?"
Pete sighs.
"This is fucked up."
"Yeah." For a long time, they just breathe. Trisha can hear the rhythmic clinking noise of Hemingway's dog tags jangling in the background.
"Do you want me to come out?"
"Nah." She'd expected him to be angry, to rant and scream about what a bitch Ashley is. Trisha knows how to deal with that. She could handle that routine in her sleep. But she's never known what to do when Pete gets like this, and it makes her anxious and jumpy.
"Are you sure?"
"Yeah, I don't..." He sighs, then continues. "I'm good." Trisha's already pulling up the American website on her laptop. "There's an 8:45 tonight. Gets in at 11:09. Pete doesn't say anything, and Trisha imagines him baring his teeth at the phone. Finally, he says,
"Yeah, okay. I can pick you up at the airport."
They spend a week watching bad television, eating junk food, and not talking about Ashley. When Pete drops her off at the airport, he says, "Thanks for coming," and picks her up off the ground with a hug.
"I'm a phone call away," Trisha promises. "If you need anything at all, I'll be on the next flight back out here."
His laugh makes the corner of his eyes crinkle up, and he says, "Don't tempt me. I'll be like the boy who cried wolf." Then he brushes her hair out of her face and says,
"It's good to see you. I missed you."
He ducks his head down, and there's a moment when Trisha's certain he's going to kiss her. Her heart does a little skip, and when he tilts his head at the last moment and lands the kiss on her cheek, she tries to tell herself she's not disappointed. If kissing Pete is a bad idea, kissing Pete when he's on the rebound is the shitty idea of the century. But she can't stop thinking about it the whole way back to Chicago. Trish's phone is buzzing insistently in her purse, but all she wants to do is get inside, out of the wind and the fucking snow. So she lets it ring. By the time she's in her apartment, it's rolled over to voicemail, and she takes her time, hanging her keys on the hook by the door and divesting herself of hat, scarf, gloves, and coat. She toes off her boots and changes into the fuzzy bunny slippers Pete gave her for Christmas, still cursing the cold and winter and whatever stupid nostalgia made her think she wanted to stay in Chicago when everyone else she knows has departed for places where winter is just a distant memory. Only after she's put the kettle on for tea does she remember her phone. When she digs it out of her purse, she has one missed call from Pete, no voicemail, and three text messages. Hometown boy makes good. Guess he's playing Lollapalooza this year. Three guesses. First two don't count. You suck at this. Miss you, tricks are for kids. Call me? Pete answers the phone on the first ring. Best girl! Is it Empires? Because Tomrad owes me $50. Nah, pretty sure Lollapalooza is too mainstream for them. Hush Sound? The Academy? See if you get a backstage pass, Pete grumbles. Actually, she twists her mug back and forth between her palms, letting the heat from the tea warm her hands. Hometown girl made good? She's been waiting for the right time to tell him the news, hoping that things would get a little more concrete with the black cards, that it wouldn't feel quite so much like a betrayal. Awesome! Pete sounds nothing but excited for her, and Trisha feels like a jerk for not telling him sooner. Can't wait to see you do your thing. Same, same. Besides, Bebe's hot. Totally your type, Pete agrees, chuckling. Too bad you're not her type. So you're more her type? The words are out before Trisha can stop them. Nah, Pete says easily. She's got this boyfriend who's built like the Rock. I'm staying well clear of that. Trisha's shoulders slump, and she relaxes her grip on the handle of her mug. It'll be good to hang out, she says. I'd like to get to know her better. Trisha's not really sure she's ready to meet her replacement, but she knows what she's supposed to say here. We'll party like rock stars, Pete promises. When Pete shows up on Trisha's doorstep, she nearly slams the door in his face. Would it kill you to call first? He barges in and says breezily, forgiveness is easier than permission. Besides, would you have answered the door if you'd known I was coming? He's right, but damned if she's going to give him the satisfaction of acknowledging it. Besides, it's hard to talk when he's squeezing her chest so tight she can hardly breathe. Pete pulls back, still holding onto her shoulders, and scrutinizing her, taking in her flat, unwashed hair and the chocolate ice cream stain on her t-shirt. How you doing, Patty Cakes? Don't call me that. Aw, don't be like that, Trixie Belle. I just wanted to see if you were okay. It's not a big deal. Trisha knew the thing with Spencer was just for fun, a tour fling, and they'd already decided to cool things off before he and Linda got serious. It would have been nice if he'd taken more than 5 minutes between fucking Trisha and moving in with Linda. But whatever, Trisha's happy for him. Really. Uh-huh. Which is why you're in your pajamas at 6 p.m. They're yoga pants. Right. Trisha's plan for the night had been takeout Chinese, a six-pack of Tsing Tao, more ice cream, and the Princess Bride. Or possibly Labyrinth. It was going to be a game-time decision. Instead, Pete chivvies her into the shower and then presents her with a turquoise strapless dress that's been hiding in the back of her closet since Victoria talked her into buying it a year ago. Put this on, he says. If we're going to drown your sorrows, you ought to look fabulous while we're doing it. They wind up in a narrow little bar that's decorated like Trisha's grandmother's living room, all overstuffed couches and shabby chic knickknacks, and lit primarily by the multicolored Christmas lights that are strung all around the ceiling. The place is packed, and Trisha has to hold onto Pete's sleeve so they don't get separated as they thread their way through the crowd. In the back corner, they spot a guy abandoning an armchair and snag it. It's a tight fit for two people, but Pete and Trisha are used to sharing things. They wedge themselves in, and Pete orders a round of B-52s. Several rounds later, Pete switched them to screaming orgasms. Trisha's got one leg thrown over Pete's thigh and tucked around his calf, and his arm is warm against her bare shoulders. She's given up on yanking her skirt down and her neckline up. Maybe she ought to be more concerned about how much skin she's showing, but it's really hard to be concerned about anything at this point.
"I liked you better as a redhead," Pete mumbles into her hair.
"Spencer liked it blonde." Spencer Smith wouldn't know a good thing if it hit him in the face. At some point, thinking about Spencer would have made Trisha sad and mopey, but right now she's so comfortable and relaxed and content that all she can muster up is a half-hearted wave. His loss. Pete clinks his shot glass with hers and tosses it back. "Damn straight. Anyway, you're too good for him." She just rolls her eyes and drinks her shot, but Pete insists, "You are. You're fucking perfect, and if he can't see that, then fuck him, and what's her face, too." "Hey, I like Linda. She's nice."
"I'm sure she is," Pete scoffs, "but she's not you."
After another few rounds, Trisha misses her mouth and pours most of her shot down her dress. Pete says, "Party foul. That was a peppermint patty, not a slippery nipple. Although, I guess that counts?" The cab ride home is a dizzy blur. Everything reeks of peppermint schnapps, and Trisha's head is spinning. Every time the driver takes a left, she rolls a little further into Pete's personal space. Somehow the right turns don't have the opposite effect. Maybe because Pete's got a pretty tight hold on her waist. They stumble up the stairs to her apartment, and she kicks off her shoes and turns her back to Pete.
"Unzip me? I'm going to die if I don't get the fuck out of this dress."
"Sweet talker," Pete replies, brushing her hair aside and sliding the zipper down. When she comes back into the living room in a clean t-shirt and yoga pants, Pete's kicked off his own shoes and he's on his cell phone ordering sesame tofu and kung pao chicken.
"Don't forget the pot stickers."
He rolls his eyes at her.
"Vegetarian."
"I'm on it. Jeez. Sorry, yeah, I think that's it." After he hangs up, he says, "One time I forget to make sure they sent the veggie ones. One time."
"You have to remind them," Trisha insists, "or they forget and send pork."
"Pork," Pete says, in his best Homer Simpson voice. Trisha throws a pillow at him and stumbles, catching herself on the arm of the couch.
"Food, now."
"Food, 45 minutes, he corrects her. She collapses on the couch despondently. Pete says, "Princess Bride or Labyrinth?" It's kind of a perfect night. The thing is, there's not really a band to fuck up anymore. Pete's single again, and Trisha's single again. It's just something she thinks about sometimes, even though she mostly realizes it's a really, really bad idea. Waking up stretched out on the couch with Pete, it's easy to forget what a bad idea it is. He's still asleep, his head tucked into her neck, and his arm resting easily around her waist. Just like always, they fit together like two halves of a broken plate. Like two things that used to be one, with jagged edges and a few missing bits. There's a crack in everything, Trisha thinks. That's how the light gets in. Pete's drooling on Trisha's neck, just a little bit, and his fingers are calloused and warm grazing the skin on her belly where her t-shirt's riding up. His hair smells like gel and smoke from the bar, and it's so familiar and comforting that it makes her want to rub her face in his hair, or cry, or shake him awake and kiss him before she loses her nerve. Pete snuffles into her neck and murmurs, "What time is it?" 4. He jerks up, his palm briefly pressing into Trisha's stomach, before he shoves his hand through his hair. "Fuck, my flight's at 6. Trisha is not disappointed, because that would be stupid. It means a lot that Pete came to Chicago, came to check up on her. She didn't know he was coming. Hell, she was mad when he showed up, so it shouldn't matter that he's leaving again so soon. But her apartment seems really empty after Pete gets his cab. She's distracting herself with Tetris and reruns of Adam Lambert on American Idol when her phone buzzes with a text message from Pete. "How you feeling?" "Great. You?" "Whatever. It's not a lie. She's not hungover, which is what he's asking about." "Delayed in Dallas. Weather." "Sucks. You gonna get out tonight?" "Not betting on it." Trisha putters around her apartment, throwing away the takeout containers and doing a load of laundry, keeping half an eye on American Idol. 2 hours later, her phone rings. "Delayed again?" "Yep, they're putting me at the Hilton." His voice briefly goes muffled and distant, probably because he's pulling his shirt over his head. 6 a.m. flight tomorrow. "You got enough meds to get you home?" Yeah. Even ordered dinner when I got to the room." There's a pause that's filled with the squeaks and rustles of Pete getting comfortable in the hotel room bed. Then he says, "I've been a good boy. Tell me a story." She plops on the couch and tucks herself around the throw pillow that smells like Pete. "Once upon a time, there were 3 little bricks. A papa brick, a mama brick, and a baby brick. The end." Pete whines, "Trisha, I'm bored. Tell me a real story." "What kind of story?" "Tell me something true." Trisha closes her eyes. "Once upon a time, there was a girl who wanted to have her cake and eat it too." "In bed?" "Shut up. It's a fairy tale, not a fortune cookie." Pete laughs, and it makes something go loose and light in her chest, makes it easier to say the words that are heavy on her tongue. "I miss you. And I miss the band, but mostly I miss you." Pete makes a surprise sound, and then there's silence on the line. Finally he says, "Your story's short on plot, Stump." "Words," Trisha mutters in frustration. "That's your department. Why don't you tell me a story?" "I've been telling you a story for 10 fucking years," Pete snaps. "Maybe you should learn to listen." He exhales, and she can imagine the face he's making right now. The same one he makes when Bronx is being a holy terror, and Pete's trying not to lose his cool. "So, what? You want to get the band back together?" "No. I mean, yeah. Maybe. But I like what I'm doing now, the music I'm making. And it's not Fall Out Boy music, and..." She runs her fingers through her hair, trying to pull her train of thoughts back on track. "I mean, that's not what this is about." "Then what the fuck is it about?" It's the moment of truth, and Trisha can't make the words come out the way she wants them to. Can I come see you in LA next week? I have this thing to do. I'm helping these kids who are cutting their first album, but I'm free after Monday." It's been a while since Trisha stayed with Pete. He's repainted the guest room a crisp, dark gray and bought a new mattress for the guest bed. There's a neon purple hoodie in the closet that's clearly Gabe's, and a sparkly hairpin on the dresser that's probably Aaron's. But when Trisha kicks off her shoes and stretches out on the fluffy comforter, the pillow still smells like whatever organic detergent Pete's laundry service uses. And more faintly, the familiar sunshine and smog scent that Trisha associates with Los Angeles. She can hear Pete down the hall, ordering takeout and fidgeting around in the kitchen, emptying the dishwasher from the sound of it. But he's been twitchy and expectant from the moment he picked her up at the airport, and it's so much easier to snuggle into the overstuffed pillows and let the warm afternoon light play over her closed lids than to think about facing him, to think about all the ways this conversation could go wrong. There's a quick tap on the door, and then Pete opens it, saying, "Pizza in an hour. You okay?" "Yeah, sorry. Just long flight, you know? Resting my eyes. Beer would be great." When she doesn't get up, Pete comes over and stretches out across the foot of the bed. He gives her foot a little shake and says, "What's up?" "Stop it, that tickles." Pete makes grabby hands for her foot, but jerks back when she kicks him in the chest. "Ow, fuck, that hurt, asshole." "My feet are off limits. I really shouldn't have to tell you this by now." "Fine, fine," he grumbles, holding up both hands. "Anyway, you're just stalling. You didn't fly all this way to break my sternum. What gives, Trish?" When she doesn't answer, Pete says, "Look, if it's the band thing, don't make any hasty decisions, okay? We don't have to give anybody a definitive answer, and there's no fucking expiration date on hiatus. We can keep saying that forever if we want to, and there's no reason to close the door." "It's not that." She sits up then, nudging Pete's belly with her foot. "Just shut up a minute, okay?" Pete manages a whole 30 seconds of tugging threads out of the frayed knee of his jeans before he opens his mouth to speak again. "No, just listen, okay?" Trisha takes a deep breath and says, "I think we should fuck." Pete blinks. "Say what?" "Just to see." That's not what she means, exactly. But she can't find the right words. For the briefest moment, Pete looks like he's been slapped. "We did that once before, right? Or did I hallucinate that?"
"Yeah."
Now Trish is fidgeting, rolling the hem of her shirt between her fingers. "But you know, that was a long time ago. And things change?" "Lots of water over the bridge," Pete agrees absently. He's got his head cocked, and he's looking at her like he's trying to find the angle. "But I gotta ask, what exactly do you think that's going to accomplish?" Trisha had imagined 100 different ways of doing this, and somehow she's still screwing it all up. "Look, I think maybe I got it wrong before, okay? And I know it's been a long damn time. But it seemed like maybe there was still a chance. Like maybe it was still something that could be fixed or made right or whatever." Pete's not answering, not doing anything but staring at her. Oh God, all she's managed to do is make everything worse. And all these years, she thought it was the stupid band that she was trying to protect. And it turns out that the band is nothing compared to this. If she's fucked things up with Pete, she doesn't know what she'll do, how she can move forward from that. Her chest is so tight, she can't breathe, and she presses her palms to the side of her head, because it feels like her brain might explode. God damn it, say something! Fuck you, Pete says viciously, sitting up and running both hands through his hair, in what's surely an unconscious imitation of her gesture. You want to get me out of your system or whatever, you can do it on your own time. In a blind panic, Trisha launches herself at Pete, determined to keep him from storming off before she can make him understand that that's not what she meant at all. She takes him by surprise, and it's easy to knock him over, pinning him to the bed.
No, that's not...
Jesus, you are too dumb to live. Pete makes a sound of protest, but she keeps talking over him. Okay, look, I'm in love with you, but I didn't want to... I thought if we just sort of cut to the chase, we wouldn't have to get all our stupid feelings all over everything. And if... That thought never gets completed, because Pete's writhing up against her, all lithe muscle and wiry strength. He kisses her, urgent and greedy, his hands in her hair pulling her down to meet his mouth. And there's no way Trisha can hold any other thought in her head. Then he's flipping them, so he's on top, breaking the kiss to stare down at her. If I'm too dumb to live, what does that make you? He's trying for mocking, but it comes out fond. The force of her relief makes Trisha laugh. I don't know, dude. I never claimed to be the smart one. Liar, Pete mutters into her collarbone. You always act like you got it all figured out, like your way is best. There's the scrape of stubble on her neck as he mouths his way up to her ear. Okay, fine, we'll try it your way. He lifts his head and flashes a toothy grin at her. Let's do this thing. Only Pete would think this was a good time to give her shit about that. She smacks the back of his head, but her teasing, hey, is cut off when he kisses her again. This kiss is slow and dirty and accompanied by an equally filthy grind of Pete's hips. It distracts her from all comparisons to the last time they did this, fixes her firmly in the here and now. She wraps her legs around his and arches her hips, makes it clear to him how much she wants this. And he takes a shaky breath and says, fuck, Trish. He bites then, just a nip of teeth on her neck, but it's hardly fair, using all those late-night confessions and games of truth or dare against her. But he's not the only one with inside information. She drags her thumbnail across his nipple, making him hiss. For a while, it's enough to kiss and touch through their clothes like a pair of horny teenagers. But eventually, she pushes him up and tugs his ripped tank top off so she can get her mouth on all the stupid ink she's been staring at for years. It's like a flashing neon sign that says, lick here. And Trisha seriously doesn't know how she's resisted that temptation this long. Pete props himself against the headboard, hands behind his head, the late afternoon sun washing gold across his skin. He's always had a gift for putting himself on display. Show off, Trisha chides. She traces the Bart skull tattoo lightly with the tip of her finger, struck again by how ridiculous it is. It takes a really pretty guy to pull off a tattoo that ugly, but there's Pete for you. Her touch is enough to make his eyelids flutter, and so she gives in to temptation and follows the same path with her tongue. She wants to suck him off, but she also wants this to last. Her primary memory of the last time is how fast and fumbling it was, how it was over far too soon. So she straddles his legs and works her way up, not down, placing open-mouth kisses on his belly, licking her way across his ribs, and up to the ring of thorns. She can feel his muscles tighten and twitch, and he's definitely breathing faster, but he's acquiescent, letting her explore and taste as she pleases. When she bites his nipple, he jerks and swears. So she does it again, licking and sucking the tender skin before sinking her teeth in. The noise he makes is gorgeous. And she says, I can't believe you took the ring out. Want me to pierce it again? He gasps, laughing like it's a joke. Both of them, she suggests, pinching both his nipples and feeling him squirm underneath her. You're going to be the death of me, Pete says, slipping her cardigan off her shoulders and then working his hands up under her blouse. I like this shirt a lot more 2 hours ago. Trisha agrees wholeheartedly with this suggestion, so she slips her arms through the sleeves and lets him help her push it up and over her head. The low appreciative hum he makes completely justifies the exorbitant amount of money she spent at La Perla. I take it back, Pete says, rubbing his thumb in a slow spiral over the blue lace. I heard he died, and this is heaven. Trisha shivers and laughs all at once. Weak ones. You're lucky I'm a sure thing, because you're not convincing anyone with lines like that. You're just so damn gorgeous, he says simply, and his sincerity makes her catch her breath, and then lean down to kiss him again. Sure thing or not, she makes him go slow, takes her time with him, and makes him do the same. A delicious tease that makes them both breathless and desperate, until she's stripped off her jeans, and the new bra and matching panties are tangled in the comforter with Pete's jeans and his bright red boxer briefs. God, Pete says, rubbing himself against her hip and running his hand along the inside of her thigh. Do you have any idea how badly I want you? How long? He buries his head in her neck, inhaling deeply. Pete, Trisha interjects, but he keeps talking, the rush of words reverberating against her throat. What do you want? You gotta tell me. Let me know what you want, because I want to make you feel so damn good. Want to make it so good for you. She's so wet, his fingers slip in easily. The first touch on her clit makes her shudder and tears a whining animal sound from the back of her throat. Slow is definitely not going to work anymore. Fuck, Pete, please, I need you to. She babbles helplessly, too distracted to make complete sentences. But he gets it, sinking two fingers deep into her and keeping a steady rhythm with his thumb. Like that? Yeah, she sighs, already feeling her orgasm building. Pete's still talking, his mouth pressed hard against her neck. You gonna come for me, baby? Wanna see you fall apart, lose control. Wanna fuck you and make you come like that, and then eat you out and make you come again. How many times do you think I can make you come tonight? He bites hard, sinking his teeth into the tendon where her neck joins her shoulder, and everything comes together in a bright flash of pleasure and release that very nearly makes her scream. She's still riding out the last waves when she remembers that the condoms that she so carefully packed are still in her suitcase. Fuck, fuck, fuck! Pete sucks in a sharp breath and sits up, pulling his hand away from her. It leaves her empty and aching, so ready for more. Are you okay? Fucking condoms, she whines, all the way on the other side of the room. The tension drains out of his body, and his mouth turns into a beaming grin. I was a shitty Boy Scout, but I did learn a thing or two. He leans over and opens the drawer to the bedside table and triumphantly pulls out a strip of condoms. Oh, thank God, you're a fucking genius. She tears a condom off the strip, rips it open with her teeth, and then rolls the condom on him, pushing him back so she can get on top. She likes seeing him laid out for her like this, and she likes being able to control the pace. He closes his eyes when he slides into her and breathes her name so softly. Just give me a minute, okay? They stay like that, fit together, but not moving, for a bit. Then he cups her breasts and brushes his thumb over her nipples, rocking up into her. It makes something twist in her gut, and she starts to move, and it doesn't take much of that before she has to touch herself. She rubs her fingers against her clit gently, occasionally moving them to touch the base of Pete's dick. He groans and says, so hot like this. Touch yourself. Make yourself come. Want to feel you come around my cock. And God, she knows he can't shut up in bed. She's fucking heard him. On buses and in dressing rooms and hotels with too thin walls. But she hadn't realized how much she would like it when it was directed at her. Trisha leans forward. It's harder to touch herself like this, but the shallower angle allows her to go faster. And she's so sensitive that all she really needs is the pressure of her fingers. Then Pete pushes her breasts together so he can mouth at both nipples at once, and she's coming again,
clenching around Pete's dick and sobbing out ragged breaths. Pete says, "Fuck, I can't," and rolls over so he's on top, driving hard into her. She's so sensitive that every thrust sends a little thrill of pleasure through her, and she just clutches at his back and lets him rut into her. And still he's muttering incoherently, a filthy litany of curses and pleas, the cadence so similar to that of his lyrics that it's like coming home. When he comes, though, he goes completely silent, the words choking off abruptly as his head presses into her shoulder. After a moment, he lifts his head, looking wrecked. His hair is damp with sweat and standing on end, and his face painfully unguarded. "God," he says, scrubbing a hand over his face, like he does when he's trying to wake up. "Right," Trisha agrees. "I should." He slips off her and slips the condom off, nodding it off and tossing it into the trash can by the bed. He lies back down beside her, stroking a hand softly down her side, and she stretches contentedly. "Can I?" His fingers are between her legs again, lightly touching, and as tender as she is there, it still stirs something in her that makes her legs fall open and her breath catch. And that's when the doorbell rings. "Shit," Pete exclaims, "the pizza." The doorbell rings twice more while Pete's digging around in the bedclothes for his jeans. He struggles to get one leg on, yelling, "Hold your fucking horses! I'm coming! I'm coming!" And then they're both laughing so hard they can't breathe. Pete gets tangled up in his jeans and trips and lands face first on the carpet. Trisha can't remember when she's heard him laugh this hard, and she's giggling so hard her stomach hurts. The delivery guy bangs on the door until finally Pete manages to get his jeans on and make his way down the hall. The knocking stops suddenly when Pete flings open the door and is replaced by the sound of Pete and the delivery guy arguing. Trisha's still trying to catch up with a sudden left turn from "sex, sex, sex" to "let's eat." She goes to the adjoining bathroom and splashes some water on her face, which helps, and then puts on the oversized t-shirt she brought to sleep in. She tries very hard not to start overanalyzing everything that just happened. Every therapist she's ever had has assured her that conversations with real people are better than conversations with the imaginary versions of them who live in her head. And Pete is right here, so there's no reason not to talk to him in the flesh. Pete calls, "Trish?" from the bedroom, and when she pokes her head out the door, he's setting a pizza box and a couple of beers on the bedside table. "I thought we could just eat in here." The smell of garlic and peppers hit Trisha, and her stomach growls loudly, reminding her that all she's had to eat today is a bowl of oatmeal and a coffee at the airport. God, food, gimme. Maybe it's because she's starving, but the pizza is amazing. There's no conversation, because Pete and Trisha are both busy shoving food into their mouths. But the silence is companionable, not awkward. Their legs are touching, and Pete's free hand is curled around Trisha's calf, solid and grounding. Pete shoves a last bite of crust into his mouth and wipes his hand on his jeans, then takes a swig of beer. So, as experiments go, that was all right, huh? Trisha raises her eyebrows. Digging for compliments. Then she relents and gives him a half smile. Yeah, it was okay. He bares his teeth at her, and because she has a heart full of joy, she bares hers back in her best Pete Wentz impression. He laughs and says, "I fucking love you so much. You know that, right?" "Yeah," she says. "I know." The end.
Some say you're crazy, say that you're no good, say your family's cursed with bad luck. But I think your cuteness understood. I
Reader's Notes. Thank you to Melusina for giving Blanket permission to record her fix and for writing such an awesome story. I have such a soft spot for always cis women fics, and this one was awesome. If you'd like to read this fic online, it can be found at archiveofourown.org/works/671508. If you'd like to download this podfic, it can be found at patacaproductions.com. Thanks for listening.